¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
A vegetable you marinate.
Grapes.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 14 for the week of December 9th, 2013. I am Wild Joker David T. Cole, and I'm here with 100th person surveyed Sarah D. Bunting. Answer in the form of a question, Tara Ariano.
What is happy to be here?
And Secret Square Trip Payne.
Circle gets the square.
Woo! As you will know, if you've been on previously.tv this week, which you should be always, every day, it is game show week. And to celebrate Game Show Week, we had to bring in our dear friend and frequent game submitter and all-around game dude, Trip Payne. Hello, Trip.
Hello.
Welcome.
Great to be here.
Let's talk, before we get into our lead topic, let's talk Trip. Trip, why don't you tell the people who you are and why you are here?
I'm here because I badgered you putting me on the air.
Not Trip.
I'm sorry. I am a professional crossword puzzle maker as my main job. I specialize in pop culture. So I have, for example, the Sudoku in TV Guide every week. I have a book called Pop Culture Crosswords, one coming out next year called Pop Culture Word Searches. And I have also done work on 4 different game shows so far. So,
can you say what they are?
Sure. My first one was a show called Million Dollar Password.
Mm-hmm.
My official title on that was Word Expert. They wouldn't let me be the guy pressing the buzzer, so I was the one who had to yell out, hit the buzzer.
I was imagining people coming up with you with like single words on cue cards, like that Bob Dylan video, and they look at you, and you're like, that's a word. And you're like, all right, thanks, Riff.
Yeah. Somebody would say ice cream, and I would say, hit the buzzer! Mm-hmm. But then I worked on a show on the Hub called Scrabble Showdown, mm-hmm. which was sort of a kid's version of the old Chuck Woolery show.
Yes.
And I was a researcher on The Chase, which is currently airing on GSN.
Ah.
And I have also researched on a show coming out early next year, Country Music Television's first game show called Win, Lose, or Pawn. Mm-hmm. Which is basically cash cab set in a pawn shop.
Oh, all right.
You come in and haggle your goods, and if you hit a price, then siren goes off. Woo, 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 would you like to double or triple your money by answering some jaywalking-style questions?
Oh, wow.
Okay, the best way to make that, to improve that show, having not seen it, the siren actually goes, woo, woo, woo.
It's very close voice. To that, actually.
In your voice, yeah. Yes. Co-signed.
So, Trip, you were nice enough to invite us to a party at your place a couple of weeks ago. And I will say that the man is serious. We counted how many dozen dictionaries
at least
that.
1 dozen. And he said this isn't even all of them.
Oh, it was more than 1 dozen.
There were more than in
And we're not talking school, you know, classroom dictionaries. We're talking drop and kill an old lady dictionaries.
Yeah. And I, too.
Well, that's the perk.
Yeah.
Because obviously, it being Trip's housewarming party, a lot of his friends from Scrabble Club and other word game exploits were there. There was talk of what your favorite definition in the dictionary was, which was maybe my favorite moment of the party.
I know some nerds.
And it was hotel, which was the most complicated description that I think I've ever seen of anything. It was a really extremely detailed description
of
what a hotel was. Yeah, it was a
great
party.
Yeah, it was good.
All right. Let me ask you one final question before we move on.
Sure.
When you worked on Million Dollar Password, did you meet my nemesis, Betty White?
I did, in fact, meet Betty White.
How is she in person?
She is totally charming. I know
you
don't want to hear this, but...
No, I believe...
No, I I met her afterwards, and I said, "Hello, Miss White," and she said, "Oh, please call me Betty."
Aww.
And at that point, I just melted.
I don't think she's a bad person. I just think she needs to relax.
Yes, you do.
I don't think she's a bad person.
You kind of.
I know she's a good person. She's very philanthropic, from what I understand. I just don't want to see her in everything. There are other old ladies, pop culture.
I wasn't aware that it was the ubiquity. I thought it was just the
essence. No. Okay. I think she's...
Now I'm the bad person.
Hey, I can't hate anyone who was on Golden Girls. I'm not a monster.
Okay.
All right. So let's talk about game shows, since this is game show week.
Name something normally worn only by children. Michael.
Clothes.
God.
Let's talk about how the game show landscape has evolved in our lifetime. Because there certainly has, I feel like, been a move away from not just game shows during the day, but toward the reality style game show hybrid, I guess.
If I could go back in time and invest in blue lasers and smoke machines, that's what I would do.
Yeah, I feel like we have Europe to blame for our problems with game shows.
Yeah, those jerks.
Yeah, it's all judge shows now.
And
there
in daytime.
Any judge game show hybrids, which I object to personally.
That does seem like a missed opportunity.
I'm saying. Here I am just putting it out there for free.
Because what game shows are still on during the day? Obviously, Price is Right. The Let's Make a Deal reboot with Wayne Brady.
Mm-hmm.
You still got your Family Feud syndicated in the afternoons with our friend Steve Harvey.
Yep.
And that's kind of it, right? I guess there's Daytime Millionaire, right?
Daytime
there's still the half
yes,
the half hour
is.
Version. And is that it?
You've hit about all of them, yeah.
Yeah.
And back enough. When I was a kid, it was like 3 hours.
Oh yeah.
Of game
until
shows.
Until the soaps came on.
Until
that's
the soaps
what
came
there
on.
Was.
That's
the
right.
Game shows.
Mm-hmm. It was like soaps started at 11 or whatever and went into the afternoon, and then like before that you just had this like giant block of game shows. And as a kid, game shows are great because lights, sounds, blinking. I mean, I didn't
those
know the answer to anything.
Free food.
Yeah.
Unless it was Bumper Stumpers in Canada, which I was totally into because it was just, you know.
You should
easy.
Describe what Bumper Stumpers is.
Bumper Stumpers?
For our
I kind
American
of. It was just basically fill it. It was sort of like, what's the thing in the newspaper where it's like, is it Jumble?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Where it's, you know, missing letters and then those things all spell something big at the end of it. It was basically that, except it was all supposed to be.
Vanity license plates.
Vanity license plates.
That you decode.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, it might have aired here on like PAX or something.
Probably. I'm sure it did.
Yeah, it was here briefly.
Oh, it was? Okay.
If you could identify words with dropped vowels, this is the game for you.
Bumper Stumpers.
But yeah, it's sad because, I don't know, there's something about the, you know, the plunger heavy, big board fun of a old game show that they just don't got anymore. I guess like Family Feud's probably the only one that's still out there. I guess, and Price is Right. But that's sort of a different animal. I think Price is Right is unique, you know, because it's a cavalcade of mini games and, you know, it changes from each one. And it's not quite as personal as, you know, you go through like 18,000 contestants in one game.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me like Family Feud's the only old school game show, classic game show that survived, you know, that feels like a game show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is a game show, but it doesn't feel like a game show to me. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't hit all those cheesy sets. I mean, it is cheesy, but not in that game show way. Like, where's those big yellow light bulbs, you know, that just
where's
blink?
Where's the playing card the size of a one-bedroom?
Yes,
thank you.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and how about all the products that, I mean, not to be a total capitalist here, and I understand that the old school game shows served the same purpose as the soaps that came on right after them, which was to, you know, sell the soap pretty much. But think about all the products that at least I only knew what they were because of game shows, that either you had to know what they cost or they were promotions. Like, who in your life used a Lee Press-On nail?
Right. Nobody. Actually, I have a question regarding that.
A prize on those shows, or like Rice-A-Roni, that wasn't a thing that was in my house.
Turtle Wax.
Yeah.
Maybe Trip or Sarah, you can answer this. When I was watching, I think it was Wheel of Fortune, probably even before Pat Sajak was on it, is when I first hit it. They used to, at the end of it, you could take if you didn't win a prize, you could take it in the form of a gift certificate to Montgomery Ward.
Or put
what
it on
is Montgomery Ward, please? I know it doesn't exist anymore, but please explain to me what Montgomery Ward is. I think it was something like Consumers Distributing.
No, I think it's just a department store, right?
Yeah. Oh, really?
It was like JCPenney.
But I don't actually know.
Okay, yeah. All right.
It was like a second tier.
Well, I was really confused as a child because it has like, it sounds like a guy's name.
Mm-hmm. The Montgomery Ward accessory wall, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Let's talk about the Wheel of Fortune prize room, though. Remember when they used to have the room where you had to like quickly go through it and like
it
identify the specific things you wanted?
Yeah.
Has anyone watched Wheel of Fortune lately?
No.
I know it's
not.
Oh,
yeah, probably a couple years ago, unfortunately. Yeah.
It's so complicated now. It's like the Big Brother of old style game shows.
Well, like, they take a ticket and then the ticket, there's like, there's a ticket involved. It has an envelope.
In the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can pick from the prize that you're going to win if you win the final prize puzzle. Right.
So how do they overcomplicate it?
There's like a puzzle that you play that's a quick puzzle before you get to the next real puzzle. And then there's in the final round, they've started the thing, which I guess they probably have been doing this for 20 years, but it still feels new to me, where they like give you certain letters.
They give you all the letters everybody picked as the default. Yeah. That's.
I know that's
years.
Not new, but I mean, like...
You always did the L, S, R, N, whatever combo, and now they give you those for free.
I'm just saying, it used to be that there were only three puzzles in an episode, and now there's, like, mini puzzles that you play before you play the real puzzles. Mm. I don't know. It just seems overly complicated to me.
Yeah.
Also, you can't be returning champion on Wheel of Fortune.
There are very few shows where you can be returning champions anymore outside of Jeopardy. It's a shame, because you don't get invested.
True?
There aren't that many.
Really? Yeah. Not even Millionaire? I guess you get to the end and that's it.
Yeah, once you get past the 10, 15 questions, that's it for you.
Yeah.
You know, outside of Jeopardy, you know, you just can't get invested in contestants anymore because one and out.
Right. Do you think that Jeopardy regrets changing the rules to let infinite returns because of Ken Jennings?
Oh, no. I think it's been really good for them.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
How much press have they got out of Jennings?
But yeah. I like it.
Just him alone. If nothing else happened, just that alone probably. Yeah. You know, put Sony in the black.
I don't watch Jeopardy every night, but I had it on. This is what, like, must have been over a year ago because we were still living in New York, and it took a while before I realized that I'd seen this episode before and that they were replaying the last Ken Jennings episode.
Oh yeah,
it was his King Baudouin moment from Quiz Show where he missed on UPS. R.I.P. Ken.
H&R Block, wasn't it?
Yes, he said it. He said UPS.
Oh,
the
I
correct
see.
Answer
yeah, yeah,
was
yeah.
H&R Block.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, Jeopardy's still like the king of game shows, isn't it? Don't you think these days?
Can we agree Jeopardy is probably the best game show?
You can't go wrong with Jeopardy. If you want a knowledge-based question and answer show, Jeopardy, you're just not going to do better than that. I think The Chase is right up there too.
Yeah.
And I would say that even if I didn't work for it. but yeah, I mean, Jeopardy, it's been around forever. It's the king of game shows. Nobody's going to argue about that.
Because I feel like what Jeopardy does right is what all of the shows that came after like the millionarification of game shows screwed up, which is, I don't need to hear your whole thought process.
Oh my God.
Just answer the question. It's like every game show has to be like a football game where it's like there's, you know, 10 questions and they're stretched out over an hour. Ridiculous. Jeopardy is fast. They get through a lot of material and it's fun to play along. It's no fun in playing along with Millionaire because it takes forever for anything to happen.
Yeah,
well, I think they're also they don't assume a certain level of stupidity in the audience, which a lot of game shows do, and some of them that's fine.
Yeah,
like a lot of it really is just luck, mm-hmm. like press your luck, which is okay. Like there's a place for that, but in game shows where your knowledge is being tested, then test it. Like I'm a snotty little know-it-all, and I want the questions to be reasonably hard,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want there to be a lot of hand-holding for me in the audience because that wastes time, but also for the contestants because then what are the stakes? Like the whole Millionaire, I need a landline. Like,
mm-hmm.
no, you shouldn't.
Well, I'm with you.
Yes, Eisenhower was a president. Get the knack. I don't know.
I'm with you, and I wish the networks were, but every time they try to put out a show with really hard questions, the show tanks immediately. So.
Having tried out to be a writer for Millionaire, this is probably like 10 years ago, they kept sending the questions back to me like, they're too hard, they're too hard. I'm like, this is a list of colors. with the number 12 in it. Which one of these isn't a cup? Really? Like, yeah, that would be like a $5,000 question. I'm like, okay.
To me, it's not even that. They need to necessarily be that hard. Like the average Jeopardy question, I don't think is that hard, especially in the last while, because they really telegraph the answer or the question in the answer, to use their own dumb parlance. But it's just, to me, it's a question of volume. Like there's just more show to get through with Jeopardy versus more filler in Millionaire.
Agree.
And I still miss One versus 100 that was a TV show and then was a Microsoft Xbox game.
I don't miss the show, but I miss the game.
Well, if you want to talk padding, very few shows had more padding than One versus 100. Yeah.
It was, but it was sure fun to play on the Xbox. Did you ever play it?
Oh, God, it really was.
Did you, Trip, ever play it?
I'm not really a video game person. So.
It was an actual...
I bought
an
Xbox headset just so I could play that, and they killed it like 2 weeks later.
That's true. We infected a whole bunch of people into playing it.
It was really good.
It
was actually an online, everybody is a human version of One versus 100, including a host who did, you know, chatter and color commentary and kept the game moving. And you could win real prizes. I won some game.
You won a game.
I won a game. Yeah, like an Xbox game that they gave to me through a download and stuff. And they just decided it was like too much work on their end. But it was like, I kind of felt like as I was playing it, I was like, oh, this is like what everybody's talking about when they're talking about how to integrate, you know, a TV show and a web, well, whatever, net property properly. Mm-hmm. It was like super fun.
Yeah.
It was ambitious.
There were only certain times of the day that you could play it. And then they would have like a block, like for a half hour, this is your topic. And then it would be a different topic in the next half hour or whatever, for like 3 hours a night or something.
Yeah, and it was always jam full.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm sold. Bring it back.
All right.
Seriously. But yeah, there was my tiny triumph is there was one night when I came in first twice in two different games. It was like,
oh, yeah.
It's like one was TV and like one was teen dramas or something like that. And let me tell you something about the late lamented One versus 100. If you do very well, strangers will send you pictures of their balls.
Yep.
Because that happened to me.
That's every Xbox game.
Really nothing to be impressed by.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Xbox Live is basically, it's the...
it's a ball X-balls. Photo delivery. Yes.
X-ball Snapchat.
Oh,
that's true. It was Snapchat before Snapchat.
Are we moving on?
Yes, moving on.
During what month of pregnancy does a woman begin to look pregnant?
September.
That's a classic. Yep. All right, so since the return of Bob Barker to The Price is Right this week inspired Game Show Week, or was at least the flimsy pretext that we used to build Game Show Week around.
Sure.
Let's talk about the best Price is Right game. Trip, why don't you go first?
Well, for me... I think a more interesting question maybe is, if you were going to be a contestant on the show, what game would you want to play?
Ah, that is a more interesting question.
If you had
the
choice.
You blew the visual question, Tara. That was terrible.
Okay, sorry.
Yes.
Read exactly what you wrote, Dave.
But like for me, if I got to choose my own game, it would have to be a game that I was confident I would win.
Right.
Right.
You know, something not too luck-based, and something with a decent prize.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very few games that meet both of those. Like, you can be sure you're going to win Clock Game, because it's just a binary search, but the prizes are crap.
Yeah.
So, if I were going to go on, I would play 10 Chances.
Okay.
Because you're almost guaranteed to win a car.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you know how to play that game... And it was always really funny when a contestant went on and didn't know how to play 10 Chances, and Bob would get so frustrated with them that he would sit down and hold his head in his hands.
What kind of cars are they giving away now? Because I was watching an old school one today to try to pull a screen grab, and they were giving away a Nova.
Oh.
I mean, it could have been worse. It could have been a Pinto, but what do they give away now? Like a Dodge Charger?
Well, I watched it today. They did give away an SUV. But I did not pay attention to what make of SUV it was. I remember the price was 18,000 something. So not a great one, but still.
All right.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, as a kid, my favorite game was Cliffhanger.
Of course.
With the yodeler.
Right.
Yes.
And his lederhosen climbing up that mountain.
Right.
But yeah, to play to win. I always thought there was a game where... I think it's called High Rollers, where you roll the dice and
that's
basically...
That was going
to
be mine.
And well, then you dice have to, game is what it's called.
Oh, yeah. Dice game. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Where you roll a dice and you stick it in a slot and you say if it's higher or lower than whatever that number is.
Yeah.
And that was a card game, wasn't it?
Yes.
For the most part. Yeah.
As long as you don't roll all threes and fours, you're good.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like a high risk, high reward.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to lean back on your skills, and I find like car, like the games where you have to like nail a car price, like all five digits. Like, after the first two, it's a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well go for the chance of the dice where you can roll ones and then guess higher.
Yeah, yeah. Because every time the car appears on the show, they put different options on it.
Yeah.
So you can never memorize the price.
Yeah, and it's not like all cars are something $9.99. They're always like, you know, $32,437. Yeah. Like, okay, mm-hmm. that makes sense. Yeah,
yeah. Sarah?
I would actually do, I don't even know if there's a name for this, but my favorite part of the show is Contestants Row.
Ah, right. Yes.
And then after that, I think if I got that right, I would just, you know, let fate take me where it will. But my favorite part of the show, I mean, as far as playing to win, I don't really have a preference. I think Dave's logic is solid, but yeah. My favorite part of the show to watch is Contestants Row.
Yes.
Now, what do you think about the people that do the dollar bid? Smart play? Douchebags or both?
Smart play.
Yeah, smart play.
Both.
I mean, whatever. Like...
No. The douchebags are the ones who always bid 420.
Oh yeah, true.
Does that happen?
$1 is a little annoying. It's like you're not even trying.
No, but that's legit. I mean, it's within
good
the
strategy
rules
most of the time.
I remember seeing one. I'm sure it happens often where you know what is there five people?
Four.
It would be like, you know, 10,000, 9,000, and then the third person bets $1, and the last person's like, all right, $2.
Yeah.
The other person's like, wait, I thought you just, like, I mean, imagine for Bob Barker. I mean, we live really close to where they tape The Price is Right. It's just a couple big blocks away. And I've walked by there and seen the gaggle of people mm-hmm. waiting to get in.
The entire sororities of...
Yes. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
With their... Gildan recently bought t-shirts with the gold pen paint.
Yes, pick me, Drew.
Yeah. But I gotta say, he probably gets frustrated a lot because there are some dumb people waiting in line there, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, this is what I was trying to nicely get at in my post today
about
Bob Barker, which is other game shows have a higher barrier for entry.
Yes.
And with shows like Price is Right or Let's Make a Deal,
Price is Right
really
is an airport game. Everybody's got to fly sometime. It's like going to the DMV. You know, everybody's got to go there. The rich, the poor.
Yes, it's the mass of humanity.
Yes,
and it's the people that self-select to try and be in the audience are a very particular kind of people.
Yeah,
that's all I'll say. And they're cargo shorts and flip-flops.
I'll say Price is the hardest game show to host in history.
I mean, sure.
You have like 75 active games that you have to know the rules for. They all are on different parts of the stage, so you have to memorize where to put the contestants.
Yes.
And... your grab ass and the beauties between takes. It's a busy day.
But he kept them straight. I feel like Drew Carey still is not that great at it, and it's been like 6 years.
Yeah, he's getting a little better, but he still has some problems.
It's that.
Has it really been 6 years?
Yes, he retired. It was right when we started at Bravo that Drew Carey started. Because we used to watch it for the first couple of days, and then it was like, it's just making us sad.
It was so disconcerting, we couldn't deal.
It's not right. It's not right. Anyone other than Bob Barker, I'm not interested. Anyway, to answer the question, mine would be Plinko, because you really don't have to know anything about prices, which I don't. I don't know what anything costs.
Now, it's funny your favorite game is Plinko, but that one time that I really wanted to get a Plinko machine,
yes.
You were like, no,
that's
absolutely not.
We had no money, and it would be the dumbest thing to spend our money
but
on.
It's so much fun.
It was 1997.
Yeah.
We had gone to the Pasadena Rose Bowl flea that's market,
true.
And Dave, for some reason,
fell in love with this thing.
He just decided that day he was a Chinese businessman. And he had to have a pachinko machine for our home. What we would do with it, I'm sure I don't know. It was one of the dumbest things.
First of all, it's Japanese.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. That makes all the difference?
Second of all, super fun. Makes all the noises. I'm sure it's super boring to play. It just looked like a lot
moving
of fun.
On.
Yes, moving
well,
on.
Well, while we're on the subject of Bob Barker's superior contestant herding skills, would you say that all time... Well, first of all, we should talk about what makes a good game show host.
I think Dave has a clip to take us into the next section.
Very good.
Something you squeeze.
Peanut butter.
Game show host personalities. Sarah, you were saying, what makes a good game show host?
Well, I think you do have to have a certain amount of contestant herding brio.
Yes. Yes.
Bob Barker definitely should have gotten an ambassadorship at some point, I think.
Yes. Yes.
You have to have the ability to sort of convert awkward moments into momentum. Mm-hmm. I think Alex Trebek is very good at that.
Eubanks was very good at that.
You have to be sort of energetic and friendly, like rooting for the contestants, but not invested in the outcome, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense.
Yep.
Yep. Absolutely.
Like a fun judge.
Dick Clark was like that on Pyramid.
Mm-hmm. And I think the occasional, like being able to shoot a look at the camera, like, really? It's not the worst. And Richard Dawson is good at that. Like being a little bit of a bitch, not the worst. Chuck Woolery had a little zing to his delivery sometimes when he wasn't completely stoned. Anne Robinson, of course.
Yeah, Richard Dawson, I think, is the best at sort of riding that line between friend of and despising the contestants on the show. Mm-hmm. And I think he did a really good job masking or converting, rather. He's sort of like a, you know, he ingested stupidity and somehow spit out friendliness and sort of, you know, outgoingness in a weird way. Because you could tell.
Mixing it with bourbon, I think, helped.
Exactly. Yeah, you can kind of tell when he's lit, and that's when he does the best job sort of handling that sort of contestant. I love Family Feud for that reason. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, Ray Combs wasn't bad at that either. I mean, you know, it's sort of...
famous original Ray.
Yeah, I mean, he's always going to be second fiddle, but when you look at the pantheon of hosts for that show, he's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
We actually will be looking at that in some depth later this week.
Oh.
Sarah has a post planned.
By the time you hear this, it will probably be up on the site, so mm-hmm. look out for that.
Cool.
Trip?
Yeah, one skill that the hosts really need to have on a lot of these shows is very tricky. It's the ability to say a lot of questions clearly in a short amount of time.
Yes.
I consider this like the Jim Perryometer. Like, on Sale of the Century in the lightning round, Jim Perry was the king of this. He could get through so many questions so quickly, and you could understand every word.
Yeah.
And that's a tough skill.
Your girl on The Chase is pretty good at
that, Brooke. I know. I mean, I only really knew Brooke Burns from Dog Eat Dog because, shockingly, I was not a big fan of Baywatch. I mean, that's a very different type of show. So I didn't know going into it, but I saw Brooke doing the run-throughs, and I thought, wow, she's good at this. I give her a solid, like, 7 or 8 on the Jim Perryometer.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But in terms of classic hosts, I mean, you've got to start, I think, with Bill Cullen. He hosted, like, 24 game shows. He was kind of your friendly uncle game show host. Dick Clark, I loved because he could do the trivia shows and the word shows. John Daly from What's My Line, who was just oozing class.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Guy Smiley from Sesame Street, who could really do anything, you know.
I'm just not sure he wasn't Jim Perry, actually. Wasn't that his...
I think that was probably one of the inspirations, yeah.
Sure. I thought he was Convy, but...
Oh, yeah, Convy.
Oh, Convy.
Loved him on Win, Lose, or Draw.
Did you go, Tar?
Yeah.
Did I go? Who is the best? I mean, it's not technically a game show, though he's certainly hosted many, I'm sure, in his time, but Tom Bergeron is one that everybody...
Oh, he's great. He's great.
On Dancing with the Stars.
And so Hollywood Squares before that.
And Hollywood, well, of course, that's what I couldn't remember. Yes, I knew he must have hosted some proper game show in addition to Dancing with the Stars. But yes, we say who the worsts are, because mine is Regis Philbin.
What?
Yep.
Dude, on what? Millionaire.
Oh, Millionaire, right, of course.
Disagree.
You disagree? Please.
Disagree.
Go ahead.
That he's bad.
Why do you not like
him? No, I think Regis is really good, actually.
Okay. Really?
I do. But why do you despise Regis so much?
I don't
why
despise are you him. I think he's... I feel like he does not have a great grasp on the game, usually, and is awkward, and is not attentive. I feel like aging has not been kind to him.
Ooh.
I don't know. I mean, I was a contestant on Millionaire, and when I was in the hot seat.
Well, all right. If you're going to go with your direct firsthand experience of
Well, sorry. But no, I mean, he made me feel very comfortable up there. Okay. He had a good rapport with the audience.
All right.
So my experience with him was always very positive. You know, and I worked with him a little bit on Million Dollar Password, not mm-hmm. very directly.
Right.
But he always seemed to have things under control.
Okay,
so
fair enough.
I liked him.
But. Sarah?
I like Regis generally, like as a personality. I didn't think he was great on Millionaire. I like Vieira much better. Mm. I can see how if you're in the chair, he might be good and it just doesn't translate. He's still not going to be as bad as Peter Tamarkin on Press Your Luck because that guy... I don't think I noticed this as a kid, but when you watch the old episodes, like the sweating, the twitching, the rubbing the nose, it's very uncomfortable.
I think I'm picking up what you're laying down, Sarah.
Yes, I'm laying down Bolivian marching powder. And on top of that, he just doesn't seem to want to be there. And whether it's because he has to meet his dealer in 10 minutes or because he just thinks the show is really stupid, which
his antique
is.
Dealer, right, Sarah?
Huh?
I said his antiques dealer, right?
Yes, of course. His antiques dealer. Yeah, no, it's not good. And he didn't seem to like any aspect of the job. Not mm-hmm. the game, not the contestants, none of it. So I would say he's my worst. And honorable mention to Louis Anderson.
Oh, that was mine.
Oh. Oh, yes. Please take it away.
Oh, I couldn't stand Louis Anderson on Family Feud.
It's kind of funny we got.
Yeah. It was all about his mommy issues and his eating disorders, that he just kept going back to that in his comments. And you know, what's number one? I want a sandwich. It's. I don't know. I just couldn't bear watching.
Yeah, well, save it for the couch.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez. Okay. Yeah, that was mine too. I just remember being really disappointed with that version of Family Feud, and he's not good.
He followed directly after Ray Combs, right?
Yes.
So it was a rebuilding period. Things had happened. Moving on.
Name a yellow fruit.
Orange.
So we have a post about this coming up as well from our past guest of the show and frequent contributor to the site, Nick Reinwald Jones. But let's throw it open to the group. Do we draw a distinction between game shows and competition reality shows in terms of their respectability or quality or repeatability? Anyone?
Well, I do.
Yes.
I think your classic question, dollars, answers game show, although it can be gamed by producers and contestants alike, mm-hmm. Has a level of realness to it that cannot be matched by your more produced productions.
Mm-hmm.
Produced productions. talent competition style stuff.
Right.
And then, you know, even beyond that, of course, is sort of like even your Survivor stuff beyond that is even more gameable mm-hmm. and more edited.
Yeah.
And, you know, all these shows have story editors for a reason. You know, mm-hmm. they take 200 hours of content, boil it down to a 1 hour story. And, you know, when you do that, you're changing reality. And, you know, one of the worst things that happened to TV probably is the first person to decide to call that genre reality television
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you do have that knee-jerk reaction. But that said, knowing how, you know, once you know all the tricks of the trade, it's really hard to get into, for me anyways, to get into a show like Survivor
mm-hmm.
or even Amazing Race, which I think is held up as like one of the better types of those shows. It's hard to get into, you know, like knowing like, you know, what the cameraman has to do, you know, what things they have to obviously reshoot, you know, that didn't actually happen in real time in the story. And then, so splitting the difference between a game show and Amazing Race are those sort of talent competition shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a little bit of that. So I kind of feel like the game show is more fun to participate in because it's usually knowledge based or at least fun to guess.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you can sort of, you have a say in your own personal at-home outcome, but right. you don't with everything else.
Right. I think with reality TV, I find myself rooting for a contestant based on their personality or something, because it's very hard for me.
You can't play against
you
them.
You can't, well, yeah, and also.
Look at me, I'm drinking water too. I'm so thirsty.
Exactly. But like with game shows, standards and practices cracks the whip. Networks cannot get away with anything in terms of gaming a game show because of the old scandals. I mean, they will find themselves in a lawsuit very quick if they tried any funny business. But like you say, with reality shows, you know, they can make whatever they want to happen if they try hard enough. So it's hard to get invested in the game element of that so much.
Yeah. I mean, it has its other perks. Obviously, they introduce drama, which you don't really get or seldom get in a game show. But when you do, it's a lot of fun. But,
well, and it's the matter of what you were describing before with regard to, you know, there's no returning champions anymore in a season of a reality show. As it gets
winnowed
down.
It's easier to get invested.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ask people to name contestants, give me the name of five contestants, I bet they'll give you one. It'll be Ken Jennings.
It'll be Ken, right.
Yeah.
Like, who? I mean, it'll be like, oh, there was
that guy that cheated on Press Your Luck.
Exactly.
He didn't cheat.
And the
guy who
gamed it. Lady from
who discovered the pattern and yeah.
And that didn't even happen, allegedly. So
I've seen the clip, though. I've seen the clip.
It did happen.
Oh, good.
Aww. That one is not apocryphal. Nope.
My faith in America is restored.
Sarah, did you have any more to add?
Yeah, I think they're two distinct genres, and the game show that we think of, you know, with the little microphone and contestants and
a
scary paper mache set is very genre in the way that we use that word to talk about TV. Like, excuse me, sci-fi or like a teen drama or a game show. It's a very distinct genre, and those trappings are known and comforting. Competitive reality is also a genre, and also has those same sorts of trappings and identifiers, but I think they're very different. But I hadn't thought of it this way, but I agree with Dave that a game show does seem much more trustworthy in some way, or like that you're not trying to constantly see how the tapestry was knotted to see, you know, to see what you must have missed or what they hid from you. So. But I think they're different. Distinct.
An old woman's breasts.
Things that sag.
Okay, backing up to a question that I skipped over in our rundown earlier. What game shows would we say deserve a reboot? Perhaps beloved shows of our youth. Sarah.
I would love to see... I loved Press Your Luck, actually. I would love to see it revived with someone at the helm who actually didn't look like he was about to be arrested the moment they turned the cameras off.
You hate this guy.
I also loved Weakest Link, speaking of things that sag. Especially Celebrity Weakest Link, for whatever reason. Like, it just brought me such joy to watch.
I watched it all the time, Weakest Link. That's funny. Yeah.
Well, Press Your Luck was revived once as a show called Whammy.
That's what I thought that was right.
That's right.
But I've got two. One that was on basic cable forever, and I watched the hell out of it. And the host and the announcer have both told me personally they would do it again, is Supermarket Sweep.
Ooh.
I would love that back. There's just something about watching people throwing hams into a grocery cart that I can watch all day. But then I've got one that's even better. This, I think, is brilliant. Bring back Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, but to make it more modern... Instead of having Rockapella doing the acapella songs, have Pentatonix come on and do the acapella songs.
I see that.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite game show was the video game show Starcade.
Oh, yes.
Mm.
And I think that could be brought back because back in my day, it was all about, you know, the optimal experience was to go to the arcade and play, but now the optimal experience is at home. And there actually is this giant audience for people doing walkthroughs and playthroughs for video games. So if you can sort of take that enthusiasm for all those YouTube channels and sort of convert it into a TV show, it would be cheap. You don't have to pay talent because, like, you know, there's like two people in the world who actually make a living, you know, doing video game appearances and stuff like that outside of South Korea. And South Korea, they go crazy for, they have video game stars in South Korea. So I think that would be my top for, like, let's take a chance on this. It's sort of a low risk, potentially high reward reboot opportunity, Starcade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My only one is I would like them to bring back Pyramid, but make it as hard as it used to be.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they've really dumbed it down.
They have.
And they have to do a 100% replica of the orange set.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Well, just keep waiting. They bring that back every 5 to 10 years.
I know, eventually
you'll get the version you want. But
An old woman's breasts.
Things that sag.
Name part of the telephone.
The bottom part.
Can't argue with that.
And lastly,
what changes would we make to game shows that are still extant, the few that exist, to make them more fun or relevant or addictive? And Sarah, I know you have very strong feelings about this one.
And Sarah, I totally agree with this.
Yes, I do. Yeah. Can we please pass a constitutional amendment abolishing the Get to Know You segment?
Hear, hear.
I assure you that nobody cares.
Yep.
Our esteemed colleague, Mark Blankenship, went into some detail about this in his Jeopardy! Contestant do's and don'ts piece that ran Monday, the day we're recording this, on previously.tv. You should all check it out. It's very funny and on point.
Yep.
The other problem is these contestants are not used to talking on TV. They're not used to chatting extemporaneously. I don't care how many times they rehearsed. No one cares. Get back to the gameplay. That's why we're watching. That's what sells the soap. I am not a crackpot.
No, definitely. No,
it's true. If I could ban one sentence from game shows forever, it would be, so what would you do with the money if you won?
Oh,
nobody cares what you would do with the money.
No.
It's true. Yeah, that's good. I can't come up with a better one. It's, you know, and I would just add, like, maybe let's do less of the steel and laser sets and get back to actually building something that looks like, you know, whatever. Like, even Jeopardy is sort of like sliding towards that kind of feel.
Do you think so?
Yeah. I mean, they're not going into the, you know, black backdrop, but they're getting all very lights and chrome and that kind of
thing. Too many video daily doubles for the sake of it. I'm with you.
Yeah. So I wouldn't mind getting some more analog game show sets in that too.
No, I'm with you. It seems like every new primetime game show is an hour, which why not give us a half hour sometime?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like you say, it's all this dark set, thumpy music, build suspense, sort of circular set, red, purple, blue, black color scheme. It's like, give us some of the pastels from the 70s and 80s. Give us a little fun and whimsy, you know? Give us some perky theme song.
Oh, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. I mean, the 70s were such a great time for video game theme songs.
Yeah.
Pyramid, Match Game. Like, these are classic. That's really good music.
I know. What do you get on Millionaire? Thump, thump, thump.
Yeah. Again, I blame Europe. This is all Europe's fault. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Europe.
Because Europeans did not sit around thinking, if their family got on Family Feud, what pose would they use?
Do they still do that? Do they still do the poses? I don't think they do.
No, they totally don't.
Oh. That's bullshit.
That's why I don't watch.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all this week on previously.tv, it is game show week.
Yes.
Lots of content every day.
Every day.
So please still come and check
lots,
it out.
Lots more to come.
Yeah.
He doesn't like you. He's grumpy as can be. He doesn't like fun. That's plain to say. Time to ask, will Dave hate it?
Probably.
Today we are talking about yet another show coming to our airwaves based on material that is very Dave friendly, but will it work?
Okay,
here is what we're talking about. The History Channel, I know you're familiar,
sure,
is developing a mini series about Hannibal, not Hannibal Lecter,
no,
the original Hannibal.
From the 18.
Even more original than that, the one with the elephants in the Alps and stuff. And I'll just read you, this is from the Deadline.com report. Halle Berry.
Is Hannibal?
I'm in.
No. Is set
half a million for one, half a million for the other. Swordfish.
Executive produce Hannibal, working title, probably will change so as not to confuse it with the NBC show.
Sure.
A miniseries about the great generals in antiquity, Hannibal and his arch rival, Scipio Africanus.
Yes.
Went head to head in the Second Punic War.
So far, they have all their facts straight.
Yes. Oscar nominated writer Jeffrey Kane, who wrote The Constant Gardener.
Okay.
Is going to write it. It's going to be co produced by
A&E Studios. Surprised he could take time away from his gardening.
Well, it's not the
dad joke. Dad joke. Dad joke.
God, Dave. All right. So, for some reason, this is material that spoke to Halle Berry. I don't really know why. But it begins in Carthage, 264 BC. At the beginning of Hannibal's life in North Africa.
Yep.
It takes viewers through the Second Punic War between Carthage and Rome. In what became legend, Hannibal and his arch rival take a sacred vow to destroy the other and the nation he served. However, they're brought together, grow to respect each other as brothers. Doesn't have anything about...
Brothers is a little strong, but okay.
Well, I'm just reading what it says.
Oh, sure.
Doesn't have anything about who was going to be in it.
Yeah.
Or who, other right. than the writer,
or who's
going to...
playing the elephants.
Right. And it also... But, alarmingly, it does remind us, history's latest miniseries, Bonnie and Clyde,
yeah.
premieres on Sunday, aka last night.
But this is a series, right?
Miniseries.
Oh, this is going to be a miniseries.
Miniseries.
Okay.
But it could be a returning miniseries in the style of Vikings, right?
Well, Vikings is a show.
Okay, I thought yeah. it was started as a miniseries mm-hmm. and then seriesed out. All right. My view of this is you, Dave, will not hate this.
Okay.
I feel like there's...
Explain how.
I'm somewhat confident in history's ability to do this material well. I think the Halle Berry imprimatur, for some reason, will probably loosen up some more money than would normally get assigned to something like this, because she is an Oscar winner. Not for directing or producing or writing, but still, she's a fancy name.
Sorry.
And I feel like this is material that is not well known enough that they would not take crazy liberties to make it more sensationalistic. There's
yep.
no reason not to divert from the real story, because it's really not, I mean, it's fairly well known, but it's not like Killing Lincoln,
right?
For example.
Sure.
So I think this might be okay, that Dave might not be super excited about it, but I think he will not hate this.
Okay. And arguing the opposite is Sarah?
Yes, that would okay. be me. And I freely admit that I may be projecting the fact that I will completely hate this onto Dave. But here's my rationale. I am not nearly as confident that the History Channel can do a good job with this unless... all of Hannibal's elephants are named Hitler. If this were on Nat Geo, which has really been splashing out on a bunch of like new cool things lately and has committed to spending a lot of money on special effects, it doesn't always work out. But if it were on Nat Geo, I would think maybe, even with the swords and sandals aspect of it, which I don't like, but I think Dave has more tolerance for than I do,
yes.
That it could turn out cool. History Channel, unless there's like a Panzer tank in it, which, spoiler, it won't be. I don't think it's going to be good. I think it's going to look really color formsy. And let's face it, the only thing that we know, you know, ask anyone, name one fact about Hannibal. They mention the elephants. No one cares about his childhood and how Scipio, whatever, took his toga money. No one cares. Like, I don't see where the material is going to come from. I don't think it's going to be historically enough for Dave to... plug into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you'll hate it.
Well, the History Channel hasn't been the Hitler Channel for a long time. They used to...
They're now the Finding Bigfoot Channel more than
bread
that.
And butter used to be, you know, reruns of, you know, whatever production company's World War II, you know, series. You know, Nazi Hunters and all this sort of stuff. I mean, that stuff, once in a while, you'll find it at 3 o'clock a.m., but these days, yeah, it's all sort of cryptozoology and
ice
but
road truckers.
I will say, last year they did the show Vikings, and it's sort of everything you're talking about, Sarah. It's actually high production. The difference, I think, between Vikings and Hannibal is Vikings is about the people, and Hannibal's about an actual historic figure. So with Vikings, they could take more liberties, combine historical characters or figures, you know, amalgamate things that happened in history. They're not so bound by timelines and actual known, you know, Hannibal did A, B, and C, and D, and he was on the threshold of, you know, conquering Rome, and he decided to, you know, have a summer break, and he fucked everything up kind of thing. Like, these are the facts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Vikings is actually not a bad show. I actually kind of enjoyed it. It's sort of like Game of Thrones light.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of, it's brutal in a basic cable way.
Everyone has beards, so it makes Dave feel comfortable.
Everybody looks like a like a hobo with a sword. And the it's you know they've written a dramatic storyline, and they have a few historians looking it over and checking it and all that kind of stuff, and it actually works out okay. I mean, it's not the sort of thing you're going to show to a classroom, but actually it's pretty entertaining. I watched the whole first season of Vikings. It's not my favorite show, but it's actually pretty good. So if they can put together a similar team for Hannibal, I'm going to say this is a show I'm probably going to check out and will like.
Oh, wow. Not even just will not hate.
I kind of like Vikings. So I think if they can capture that same feel and they put the same kind of money into it, I'd watch it.
How did you feel about Bonnie and Clyde, Dave?
Did not watch
just
it.
Kidding.
Don't
no
care.
One watched it. I, Tara Ariano, will be the first to admit that SNL Sketch Predictor is usually, which appears on previously.tv every week that there's a new episode, usually not actually predictive of what's going to be in the episode, more like a wish list of what I think they should do or what I would like them to do.
It's what we call in the biz packaging.
Sure. But this week I nailed it on the head. This week's host was Paul Rudd, and so I assumed rightly that there would be a lot of walk-ons from his Anchorman co-stars. I assume definitely Will Ferrell. I thought probably David Koechner because he is also an SNL alumnus. Steve Carell I thought was a long shot. He did end up appearing. So did Kristen Wiig, who also was in Anchorman. And I guessed that of all of the Will Ferrell sketches that they might revive for the episode, they would do Bill Brasky, which is a bunch of old gross guys in a bar sharing reminiscences of their old friend Bill Brasky, this larger-than-life Chuck Norris facts type of figure.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, by the way, a sketch they have not done since 1998.
Right.
So
wow.
I predicted that this would be the one, and not only that, it would be Ferrell, Koechner, Rudd, and Taron Killam. Then, on Saturday afternoon, Adam McKay, former writer on SNL, wrote a lot for Will Ferrell and directed Anchorman, tweeted that he was writing a Bill Brasky sketch for that night. It did appear in the exact slot where I said, the last slot of the night, with those four guys, plus Kenan Thompson. And I am great.
If you do say so yourself.
Well done. Regular-sized triumph, frankly.
I mean, the fact that they haven't done it in 15 years, like of all the ones they could have revived, come on. I'm not saying I made it happen.
Right, that music means it's time for the canon. Our guest, as always, is going to put up an episode of a show for consideration into the Extra Hot Great Canon. And Trip, what do you have for us?
Well, this episode is, of course, all about game shows. So I tried to come up with a great standalone episode of a game show, and I completely failed. So I came up with something else, and I submitted the clips and prepared my speech, and then realized there is, in fact, a perfect episode of a game show. So I'm just going to encourage everyone to go out there and look up the finale of High Rollers on YouTube. if you've ever watched Jeopardy and thought, has Alex maybe had a little nip of something before going on stage? Go watch this episode of High Rollers because he is wasted out of his mind. And it is the funniest 22 minutes you will ever see of a game show.
Wow.
And Tripp, not to sell yourself short, there is gaming in this episode that you picked.
There certainly is.
Well,
so you've tied it in thematically.
Absolutely.
Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm. I assumed that you did it purposely, so you shouldn't have said anything.
you're smarter than I am. No, I have in fact chosen my favorite sitcom of all time, which is Taxi, and I've chosen from March 1982, season 4, episode 21, The Wedding of Lotka and Simka. I consider this to be the funniest TV wedding of all time. I kind of feel like before I talk about the episode, I should talk a little bit about Taxi because I feel like it's one of those shows that a lot of people haven't seen because it's not really syndicated.
It's hard to find streaming.
Yeah, I believe it.
It used to be rerun all the time, I feel like, 10 or 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's, yeah, but I feel it's like, really not on anywhere.
Yeah, right. I feel like there's a lot of people now who've never seen Taxi, even though they've heard of it. So Taxi ran from 1978 to 1983, first on ABC and then on NBC, and it just won truckloads of Emmys. It won Best Comedy 3 years in a row. It is set at the Sunshine Cab Company in New York City. It's sort of your classic workplace comedy where you have the one normal guy, Alex Rieger, played by Judd Hirsch, with a bunch of wackos around him. It's very much in the style of Cheers later and a lot of other shows. You have, among the wackos, you have Danny DeVito playing Louis De Palma, who's the comically evil dispatcher. You have Tony Danza, who's a cabbie who wants to be a boxer. You have Christopher Lloyd playing Reverend Jim Ignatowski, this burnt-out druggie from the 60s, and so on. And among them, you have Andy Kaufman, who plays mechanic Lotka Gravis, who is an immigrant from the old country. They never actually name it. And during the course of Taxi, he meets another immigrant from the old country, a woman named Simca Doblitz, played by two-time Emmy winner Carol Kane. And they begin to date. And you might be able to guess what happens in this episode, which I remind you is titled The Wedding of Lotka and Simca.
Slow down.
I know. Taxi is kind of in the classic sitcom style, meaning it's very theatrical. Watching Taxi is like watching a play almost.
Yeah.
It has long scenes, a single camera for most scenes. So if you're more used to like modern 30 Rock sort of quick edits, quick cuts, short scenes, it might feel kind of slow until you just
and it even looks like a play. Like the sets there have a lot of floor space, which is very uncommon these days to see so much barren floor space, and really just look like they could have put it on at a community theater somewhere.
Yeah. If they could get this cast at a community theater, I would go to that community theater.
So totally.
So this episode, in fact, only has four scenes total. So I'm just going to go through the scenes one by one. The first scene is set in the garage. Almost every episode of Taxi starts in the garage. And Lotka announces to the group that his multiple personality disorder has been cured. I have to say at this point, thank God, that was the worst subplot Taxi ever had. Lotka is a very sort of meek, unassuming, innocent guy. And his alter ego was this kind of lounge lizardy guy named Vic Ferrari. And he just did not fit in with Taxi at all. So when he announced that he's been cured, that was a huge relief.
It sounds like something Andy Kaufman may have asked for.
Yeah.
It totally was.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Total Tony Clifton.
It was. So he brings in his therapist to meet the group, and it turns out to be a cameo of Dr. Joyce Brothers.
And Hal.
Yes.
What a very 70s, 80s thing
it
that
really
was.
It really is.
Yeah.
Anyway, after she leaves, Lotka says that now that he can lead a normal life, he's going to ask Simca to marry him. And Elaine, Mary Lou Henner, asks Lotka why he doesn't seem happier about it, and he says this.
Simca and I are Orthodox. By tradition demands that we go through from the proposer to the last moment of the ceremony, we have to go through a series of tests. And if we fail even one test, we never to be married.
Okay. So why do you guys put up with it?
Well, because in my country there is a belief, and rightly so, that the only thing that separates us from the animals are mindless superstition and pointless rituals.
I love that line.
Yeah.
So he then asks Alex to be his Gewurzel, which is the person who has to actually go through the proposing ritual for him. It's usually done by a leper or the village idiot, but Alex will do in a pinch. So then we move on to scene two, which is the proposal scene. And most of this scene is physical comedy, so it's kind of going to be tough to do it justice here, but there's a lot of weird costumes, there's a lot of the old country made-up language, there's a really good scream. But at one point, as Alex is going through all of this wackiness, he asks Simca's permission to continue in English rather than the old country language. Simca replies that he can do it in whatever language he wants. She's just glad he's not a leper. And he then begins to read from a prepared text.
There is our fine young prince.
You have to sing it.
Sing it? I can't sing.
You have to. You have to do it beautifully or else she won't accept.
I can't sing.
You have to.
I can't.
Sing it.
Mm-hmm. There is a fine young prince. He has mounted Cossacks.
I'm going to die a bachelor.
Shout out to Judge Hirsch's chest hair. All oh, yes. of it.
Oh, yeah.
That was
if you had eight doubts, this was the 70s.
Yeah. Yes.
So Alex then gives a very impassioned plea on Locke's behalf, and Simca responds by grabbing the nose of the Gewurzel, which signals her acceptance of the proposal. So then in scene three, Simca has to go get the blessing of Latka's mother and to hear the passed down wisdom of her people in a ritual known as the Mirtzig, which no man has ever heard. I feel like the Mirtzig is worth hearing in its entirety.
And I want so much to hear the wisdom of my culture. Please tell me the Mirtzig.
Listen carefully to me, my child. I will tell you the Mirtzig. Men are nothing but lazy lumps of drunken flesh. They crowd you in bed, get you all worked up, and then before you can say, is that all there is? That's all there is. They pass out smokes when you are still whimpering from pain of delivery. Your flaxen hair will become like dead grass. And your once firm breasts will fall to the floor.
Thank you. I will store that away.
So then there's a bit where the ritual has to conclude with her kissing her mother-in-law's cheek, which is tricky because Carol Keane is approximately 2 feet tall, yeah. And the woman playing Locke's mother is approximately 10 feet tall. But that's settled, and then we move on to the wedding itself, the main scene of this episode. And the wedding is conducted in the language of the old country, so they have a translator there for Locke's American friends. And as the translator explains to the group, the wedding is more of a test than a ceremony, and if the bride and groom answer any of the questions or fail any of the tests, they can never be married. So as the bride enters the room, and then the groom, we hear this from the translator.
To truly understand the feelings and emotions of their mate, the bride and groom must marry in each other's clothes. And now, the groom.
Andy Kaufman comes out in a dress.
You don't know how long I have waited to see you in your father's wedding dress.
So the ceremony begins, and the first test involves putting a crown of rue on the bride's head. And if she can walk without it falling off, it proves that she's a virgin and may be wed. So Simca takes two steps, and the thing flies off her head across the room, leading to this brilliant speech.
My beloved family and friends, this was just a horrible accident. You must believe that never have I, this innocent, untried girl, ever been with a man. Never have I felt a man's warm, moist lips pressing against my waiting mouth. Nor have I felt the hot flesh of a lover turning at night, his muscular arm resting against my stomach, my breath coming quick, senses heightened, the air humid.
Simca.
I'm finished.
Every time I hear that, I think of Madeleine Kahn's speech in Clue.
Yeah.
So then they begin the ritual of the three questions. Locke gets the first question and answers it correctly. And the second question goes to Simca.
Number two. Tramask abi git agit. What is the greatest gift one person can give to another? She said $5,100. That is right.
Andy Kaufman's face in reaction to that is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Like, huh?
So then Laka gets the third and final question, which he gets incorrect. And the priest ends the ceremony and says that they may never be married and prepares to leave. And at this point, Simca jumps up onto the altar and gives this speech.
Wait! I will not allow this! What do some ancient questions have to do with two people who love each other? Luck is my life. If you will not marry us, then we will marry someplace else. We must be together.
Now, obviously, that's not a funny speech, but it's a really well-written and well-acted scene, and one of the great things about Taxi is its emotional moments as well as its comedic ones are still very well done. These are people who can act. Well, of course, as it turns out, Simca's demanding to be married was exactly what the priest wanted to hear. That was the final test, that one of them had to stand up and demand to be married. So they finished the ceremony, and then, as you do, they danced the joyful dance of the plummets as the credits roll. So I put it to you that this episode has great physical comedy in every scene. It gives us a really smart, quotable script with such lines as "men are nothing but lazy lumps of drunken flesh" and "the hot breath of a lover," which I have said way too many times. And for 22 minutes, there's just a whole lot of jokes in this episode. So I give you, the jury, the wedding of Latka and Simca.
Very well done. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to front with my notes. So going from the end credits, shout out to Botany 500. Remember Botany 500?
I totally saw that. Alex Trebek clothiers.
Yeah.
That's right.
I feel this episode was solid and but really kicks into high gear with the quiz, or the test, yeah, rather, at the end. And what's the priest's name, Tara?
Vincent? The actor, Vincent Schiavelli.
Yeah, wow. That guy came out of the womb looking like that.
He looks no different here than he would like 15 years later on The X-Files.
Yeah.
And he was also in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Looks, yes, the same. 10 yeah, years earlier than this.
Uh-huh. The, with Danny DeVito.
Yep.
Trivia end note.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
The randomness and goofiness of the rituals of the wedding kind of reminded me. I was trying to figure out what I was watching it. I'm like, what's... You ever see Top Secret, the movie?
Yeah.
There's a dance that they do in like a German ballroom of some sort. And it's just like a total string of nonsensical moves, including the ladies blowing up their cheeks and the men putting two fingers in each side. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And all that kind of stuff. It kind of reminded me of that. It must have been so much fun to write. Mm-hmm. Just like stringing together all these crazy things, having Judd Hirsch in...
animal skins.
Animal skins and lays and... up. It's interesting you said Cheers, because I think you can trace the lineage of this from probably not so much Cheers as sort of an offshoot, but you go from Taxi to like a news radio to Brooklyn Nine-Nine, all workplace comedies, all mixing an eclectic character lineup with grounded storylines, you know, that sort of do just the perfect mix of silliness and... relationship-based, workplace
realism.
Goodness. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that this episode is very Kaufman-heavy, and you would think a little Kaufman would go a long way, and it usually does, I would think, but I think it's a credit to the writers and to Carol
Kane
that they struck this great balance. That even with minimal contributions from Danny DeVito and Tony Danza and Mary Lou Henner and the rest, that this episode is still really strong, pretty much just from start to finish. Once you sort of just, if you haven't approached the show in a while, you get your Latka Simca normalization down after the first couple of minutes. I think you're back in the game and this really strong episode.
Sarah?
I am less... normalized to Latka than you. I really like Taxi, and I think another episode with way less Kaufman might have hit me better. But here's, and this is like kind of a side pet peeve, And that extends like Perfect Strangers and a number of other shows of this ilk that are sort of like, oh, you know, non-native English speakers, they'll have funny accents and funny sounding terms from their cultures, but they'll have basically completely idiomatic English, except when they don't know a word like testicles, which will mine for comedy. And then they'll go back to having perfectly normal accented English. And also when they're alone together, they don't speak in their language. Like, I understand that this is a late '70s, early '80s sitcom. That just annoys me. And that kind of humor is, it's not what I enjoy. Kaufman is less annoying here to me than he usually is. This is my least favorite Kaufman incarnation. And Carol Kane is, you know, Carol Kane is really good in that bit with her stomping on the mother-in-law's foot to get her to bend over so that she can kiss her on the cheek and complete the ritual is good. And, you know, Judd Hirsch is a pro, but generally speaking, this episode just felt a little, we were talking before about how it was very theatrical and kind of like a play. And usually that's what I like about the show. But in this case, it did feel a little stagey and like there was like things were taking kind of a long time to happen. And the jokes felt a little telegraphed to me. And, you know, he comes out in a dress like there was just very early 80s. Like, well, it's, it's a dude in a lady outfit. I mean, yeah, it's not exactly my thing. Generally speaking, the show is a good one from this era that I usually enjoy. Especially when it's based more on their workplace interactions and getting more of the cast involved. This one I did not love.
I hear what you're saying about the foreign characters, and I thought that too. You know, this is like on a continuum with Perfect Strangers and Fez from that 70s show, same mm-hmm. thing, where it's sort of like that might have been the last instance where you could really get away with this sort of like, well, we'll just not say exactly where the person's from and then wink, like, you know. And I expected to be more bothered by that than I was, but I actually was won over, and I think it was completely because of Carol Kane. Because I was nervous about this one too. I'm also not an Andy Kaufman fan, but she was so good that for me she canceled out the elements of him that are annoying. And she had so much charm in all her scenes, not just like, I mean, there really are only four, but her scene with Alex was very cute, and with the mother-in-law was funny, and she was great at the wedding. And so, and in general, I feel like lately I have more of an appreciation for multicam shows than I used to. You know, they've sort of obviously fallen out of favor, and the ones that are kind of on now are usually more junky, like mm-hmm. like the, I mean, I know people like the Big Bang Theory, but Big Bang Theory or Mom or, you know, Sean Saves the World or whatever, but I've been watching a lot of Will and Grace lately, and it's gotten me back into appreciating what a multicam show can do that a single cam show can't, in terms of like just putting you in it, making it all the play elements that like you described, that make them more fun to watch, and that you really feel the immediacy of the audience's reaction to. And so especially not just Carol Kane, but also the guy who played the translator and Vincent Schiavelli.
I did enjoy him. Yeah.
The three of them to me were like the episode MVPs. Everyone else was sort of eh, but ultimately that put it over for me.
Yeah.
So I would vote yes.
I will say I was amused by the Dr. Joyce Brothers thing, but I don't think the episode really started until the second scene. I mean, yeah. I think all her stuff fell flat. It wasn't funny. It was just a get for some casting director. But I think the episode starts.
Other than her reaction to Louis, that I thought was very
yeah,
funny.
I was about to say, Danny DeVito has a great moment where he's just leering at her, and that was in her just
she just immediately
reaction.
Like pats away. Yeah.
That was a good joke. They didn't over close with that. Yeah. I like
yes.
that.
Okay, yeah. So Tara, you said yes, and Sarah?
Yes. Despite some highlights and a strong argument from our guest, I will have to vote no.
All right, and I'm going to say exactly the opposite. Despite some lowlights and some trouble getting into it, and it takes its time starting, I think it was a good example of a show that can change its formula a bit and still put out a strong episode. So I am going to say yes. So, all right, Taxi, Season 4, Episode 21. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon. Wow, this is turning out to be a long show, so let's do this quick. Let's go around the dial.
Perez Hilton is going to be starring in a reality show about being a father. I watch some garbage, but even I will not watch that. Wow. So congratulations to him for riding whatever hobby horse he can for however long he can, I guess.
Low Winter Sun has been canceled. I'm surprised they formalized that with an announcement. I think everyone just assumed that it had, you know, disappeared down the drain, but now it's official.
Here's something to noodle. Dukes of Hazzard theme song, just the good old boys.
Sure.
They've been in trouble with the law since the day they were born. How's that possible?
HBO is rebooting Real Sex. I guess people are excited about this. I don't know why this needs to be in our day and age, why sex needs to have a show around it from the likes of HBO. But if this can happen, maybe everyone I know will also get their wish and MTV will reboot Undressed.
Ooh. Scandal's episode order was cut to 18, thanks in part to Kerry Washington's pregnancy, or so rumor has it. I think this is actually a bonus for the show because credulity was going to be stretched to the thinness of a spider web at a full 22. Better to just do 18.
Dad's has also had its episode order cut from 22 Ooh. To 19. So this could be the beginning of the end for Dad's. It was the lowest performer last week of all of the Fox sitcoms. So perhaps that's the death knell. Lance Reddick, Sarah, is coming to American Horror Story. He's going to be playing a character who is described as the voodoo equivalent of Satan.
Nice.
There's nothing bad about this news, frankly. There's no way this could go wrong.
Anybody else see him on NSF?
NTSF SDSUV?
Yeah.
You should check out the post that God, Dave so did good. About his character on that show, which was bonkers.
Nobody's having more fun on TV this year than Lance Reddick, for sure.
It was fun
that
to see him smile.
Was even fun to read that post.
Yeah.
Dave, Sci-Fi is doing a TV series based on your favorite movie, Legion!
Officially not my favorite movie, but...
It'll ruin it.
That's a really good shit show of a movie, Legion. We talked about it on the Mark 1.
On the old
one.
Podcast.
Oh, so
it's
good.
Not actually Dave's favorite movie.
No, but it's going to be good bad. I can feel it in my bones.
Are you going to watch Dominion?
Yeah! Hey, Mob City, stop it with the ads for Mob City while I'm watching Mob City. You got me, Mob City!
Botched! E has a show about botched plastic surgery called Botched. Obviously, I will be watching this. Yes, Perez Hilton, that means I'm more interested in people's messed up boobs than I am in you!
And finally...
Exciting news for Sarah D. Bunting. Regina King got a new job. Yay! Unfortunately, it's on Guillermo del Toro's vampire show, The Strain. So I don't know. Does this mean you're going to watch it or not?
I will try.
Wow.
I wish it were called The Strain, though. Gross.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Antara, you have our winner.
Well, we were skeptical last week, but apparently NBC is the winner this week because The Sound of Music Live did amazingly well. And certainly this is going to open the door for the network to do more live musicals in the future, I have no doubt. And for some suggestions as to what NBC should do next, please go to previously.tv and check out Mark Blankenship's story from Friday, where he proposes how several different well-known musicals could work in this context. And he is right and great.
And Loser of the Week?
The Loser of the Week, I don't know exactly if Mandy Patinkin is the loser, or if, as is so often the case when I declare a loser, it's really all of us. But according to a recent Charlie Rose appearance, Mr. Patinkin has ridded himself of his facial hair. It's very disconcerting. He's taken the beard out of Berenson. I'm upset.
How long
he'll grow it
that,
back.
How long do you think that takes to grow that? That's got to be a couple
3
months.
Days.
That 18 hours, I was going to say. couple of B12 caplets.
All he has to somewhere. Do is like think really hard and it's back.
That that beard is having beers with Alex Trebek's mustache in heaven.
And Keith Hernandez's mustache. All right.
That brings up an interesting question, which is this. Do you know what time it is?
Is it game time?
Nap time.
Game time. All right, everybody. This is the third game time of the season, right?
Right.
Yes, Tara has two, Sarah, and the guests still looking to put a point on the board. Today, we are playing Game Show Elements.
Oh.
With the help of the fine people at the Extra Hot Great Assist team on Twitter. That's at EHG Assist if you want to help out with game time ideas and help fill out quizzes. We have some questions, but not enough questions for. That's where you do it. Here's how it's going to work. I will read you up to four elements from a game show, starting with the most generic and getting more particular with each subsequent clue. After each clue I give, you can either ask for the next clue or answer. You only get one answer.
Okay,
so you got a little risk-reward system going on.
Mm-hmm.
Each clue I give reduces the point value by one.
Okay,
answering the first question, you get 4 points. Answer the second, 3, 2, then the last hint answer will get you 1 point. Okay. Make sense?
Yes.
Yep. All right. We have 33 questions plus a tiebreaker.
Okay.
And let's see who's going first. We're going to go our person. Yeah. We're going to go with the picky. Picky, what do you got?
We will start with Tara.
All right. We're going Tara, as Picky says. Sarah, and Sarah. Then Trap will go third.
Trap.
All right. Are we ready to play Game Show Elements?
Yep.
All right. Tara.
Yeah.
Judges. You want another clue? After each one, you're going to answer or ask for another clue. Judges.
Clue.
Talent.
America's Got Talent.
$516.32. And lastly, the Victory Munchkin. That was?
Gong Show.
Gong Show.
Oh, okay.
All right. Man. Sarah.
So the first few are going to be very unhelpful.
These are totally randomized questions. You may get easy ones. You may get hard ones. Who's to say? It's all up to fate. All right. Alcohol.
Clue.
Blended.
Blended?
Yeah.
Clue.
Celebrities.
Oh, Jesus. Match game.
What?
Last one was name dropping, and that's Hollywood Game Night. Blended faces.
Of course.
Okay, Trip.
Mm-hmm.
Buzzer.
Oh, that's specific. I'm going to get another one.
Handshake.
Another one.
Good answer.
Family Feud.
Mm-hmm.
That's good for 2 points. On the board. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Secret.
Clue.
Center.
Hollywood Squares.
Correct.
For
three.
Okay.
Yeah. Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Offer.
Clue.
Door.
Let's make a deal.
Nice.
3 points. Well done. Trip. Match.
Next.
Lattice.
Hollywood Squares. Oh.
Is it the Newlywed Game?
It is a Newlywed Game. Your next clue was marriage, followed by whoopee.
Oh.
Whoopee. All right. So now we're on to
me.
All right, Tar. Here we go. New York City.
Okay. Hint.
Pop culture.
Okay. More.
For a dollar.
I don't know. Last clue.
Quizzed in the face. For
I
shame.
Know, I know it.
Billy on the Street.
Oh,
wow.
God.
Those
Billy,
were
I'm
good.
So sorry.
Those
it's
were tasty,
so
tasty clues.
I know
too.
They were.
Oh, dearie me.
I'm so embarrassed.
All right, Sarah.
Yes.
Trivia.
Clue.
obstacle course.
Oh, crap. Clue.
Physical challenge.
Double dare?
Correct. Nice. Correct. For 2 points. Yep.
Thank you.
Now we're to trip. Money card.
Next.
Instant bargain.
Let's do next.
Fame game.
Yeah, Sale of the Century.
It is Sale of the Century. Yeah. Last clue, Summer Bartholomew. Yeah. All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Red team.
Clue.
White team.
American Gladiators? Shit.
Gold Rush, Hexagons, Blockbusters. A tough one.
Never would have got that.
Yeah, I didn't think you would either. Okay, Sarah.
Yep.
Spin.
Clue.
Before and after.
Well, fuck it. Wheel of Fortune?
Yeah.
3 points. Nice. All right. Trip. Question.
Next.
Slots.
Next.
Devil.
Joker's Wild.
Joker's Wild is correct. Last clue was Harlequin.
Harlequin.
All right. That brings us, that was our 12th question. So let's get a score.
Oh, boy. I have 3. Trip has 6. Sarah has 8.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But stupid.
Titara.
Yeah.
Teams.
Hint.
Phrase.
Hint.
Markers.
Hint.
Paper.
Lose or draw?
1 point. Sarah.
Yep.
Spins. Spins.
Clue.
Big money.
Price is Right.
Let's make it. Or no. Press Your Luck.
Yep. Press Your Luck. Big board. And finally, whammy. All right. So to trip. Clue.
Clue.
Partner.
Next.
Celebrity.
Next.
Word. Clue, partner, celebrity, word.
Okay, that's 100 different shows. Password. Okay.
Nice.
Okay. Tatara.
Yep.
Triangle.
Pyramid?
Steve got you with that one. Triangle. Circle. Thin mic. Boobs. Yep. Match game.
Oh.
Triangle and circle are the player symbols. Oh. All right, number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Oh! True fan, Trip Payne in with the Spread Eagle. Okay, to Sarah.
Uh-huh.
Categories.
Clue.
Winner's Circle.
Oh, shit. Clue.
7-Eleven.
Clue.
Dick Clark. Categories, Winner's Circle, 7-Eleven, Dick Clark. Your answer.
Super password?
Nope. Pyramid.
It's pyramid. Damn it. In any denomination, we would have accepted. All right, back to Trip. Oh.
I'll get it.
Our doorbell's back. Yes, we're having more work done on the house. All right, Trip. Models.
I'm tempted, but next.
Fist bump.
Deal or no deal.
Nice.
3 points. All right, here we go. For Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Toss up.
Oh, shit. Clue.
Insurance marker.
Clue.
Big numbers.
Clue.
Dice.
Yeah.
It's something that...
Tic-tac-toe?
Drunk Alex.
Oh.
It's High Rollers, discussed on this very show.
Nope.
All right. That's over to Sarah. Numbers. Yep. Numbers. This game show has numbers.
Oh, clue.
Bid.
Clue.
Showcase.
Oh, Price is Right.
2 points to Trip. Letters.
Next.
Words.
Next.
Hopper.
Hopper. Next.
Woolery.
Oh, Scrabble.
The Lingo with the hopper.
Oh, okay.
The hopper. All right. To Tara.
Yeah.
Letters. Mm-hmm. Grid.
Scrabble.
Seesaw. Dragon. That's tic-tac-doe.
Okay.
The dragon. All right. To Sarah.
Yep.
Questions.
Clue.
Answers.
Clue.
Double.
Jeopardy.
2 points. Here we go. Trip.
Yes.
Panel.
Next.
Questions.
Next.
Occupation.
What's my line?
2 points. Nicely done. And that brings us to...
Oh, shit.
Our two-thirds score break.
Well, I have 4.
Yeah.
Sarah and Trip are tied with 12 each.
Oh, very nice. I love it. All right. So if we go to Tara.
Yep.
Team.
Clue.
Bank.
Weakest link.
3 points. Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Chairs.
Clue.
Channels.
Oh, remote control.
Yes.
3 points. Oh, this is good. This is kismet. 4 trip. Mm-hmm. Bonus specials.
Next.
Frozen yogurt machine.
Next.
Gourmet hams.
Oh, supermarket sweep. I'm
2 points. Or Tara.
Yep.
Partition.
The dating game?
Oh, look at here. That's our first 4 point.
Wow.
All right. Sarah.
Yep.
I think this could be another 4-pointer. $5,000.
Nope. Clue.
Dunce cap.
I don't think I know this one. Clue.
Best of 10. Trip Payne just nodded knowingly.
Clue.
He judges you. Kimmel is your last clue. Kimmel. As in Jimmy.
I don't actually know this one.
Bueller.
Ben Stein's money.
Bueller. Win Ben Stein's money.
Right.
All right, Mr. Payne. Bid.
Next.
Orchestra.
Name that tune.
3 points. Oh, he's got the eye of the tiger, people. The eye of the tiger. All right, here's your last question.
Yep.
Trivia.
Proceed.
Audience.
1 versus 100.
Shit.
Phone. Lifeline.
Oh.
Who wants to be a man?
All right. Can I get a score, please, between Trip and...
between Sarah. Trip and not me and Sarah? Sarah has 15. Trip has 17.
All right. Interesting. Here's your last one.
Yep.
You ready, Sarah?
Yep.
Shout, nope. Higher. Higher.
Clue.
Lower.
Card sharks.
3 points. All right. Interesting. Okay. So now you're 1 point ahead of Trip, right?
Yes.
Okay. Trip.
Yes.
Shout out.
Next.
Video bonus.
Cash cab.
Correct. And you know what that means? I think we have our very first Mark II guest win.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy.
Valued guest.
Nice.
Final score, 20 for Trip to 18 for Sarah.
Very good. Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We talk game shows with our prized guest, Trip Payne. Cross the Alps to ask, will Dave hate the history drama Hannibal? And Tara gloated about her Saturday Night Live tiny triumph. Trip successfully pitched us the taxis, the wedding of Lekka and Simca. We went around the dial, we crowned winners and losers, and Trip, congratulations, was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
No whammies.
Sarah D. Bunting.
In the butt, Bob.
And Trip Payne.
$1.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Rate.
your husband say he is basically more urban or rural, Kathy?
I don't know what they mean.
You know him. You married him. What do you think?
Heck, he's urban.
He's urban.
Yeah.
How long has he been that way?
About 2 months.
2 months he's been there. Do you think there's anything he can do about it?
He went to a doctor.
Oh, he did. Did the doctor give him anything for his urban?
He gave me something.
America.
Wow.
Mom, can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.